So the other aspect of mind used to work with hindrance is this natural capacity we have for sensitivity. So it's more of a feelingful quality of mind rather than the thinking quality of mind. And so I want to approach this through a poem. So I'll drop the poem in and then I'll sort of unpack it a bit. So this is a poem by Rumi, who's a Sufi poet, and it's called The Guest House. There, here we go. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still, treat each guest honourably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So that's it in a nutshell. I want to unpack that a bit. So the basic metaphor in the poem is the mind as a guest house. The mind as a guest house. And to the guest house come the hindrances, our old familiar friends, and they arrive unbidden. They just come unbidden as visitors. And the approach, the suggestion is to welcome and entertain them all. Sort of say hello, welcome them in, have a friendly attitude. This might be a bit unaccustomed as an approach, but this is a suggestion. Welcome, entertain. So in relation to meditation, that means sort of bringing awareness and attention to them. Notice that they're there. Sort of greet them at the door. So rather than trying to push them away, push them out, not trying to slam the door in their face, we're sort of recognizing and acknowledging that there they are. And that actually we can't shut them out. They've got a claim on our attention. So this is kind of noticing the difference between a guest who's come in and a random person who's walking by. So the hindrances are the ones that come knock on our door and they want in, and we can't shut them out. So we're not trying to shut anybody out, but sometimes people just walk past, you know, there's a thought arises and there it goes and it's off. But sometimes, no, they're more persistent, they want in. So, okay. And then at the end, Rumi's saying, be grateful for whoever comes. So this is quite a different attitude to hindrance, really. So it's rather than one of aversion, it's one of sort of engagement and interest. So the sort of relationship we have with hindrances is that we're seeing them as sort of unresolved emotions. So when this hindrance comes, it's coming with an opportunity to resolve. Yeah, so there's something unresolved. That's why I've got this kind of emotional charge, and there's an opportunity there with this coming into awareness for resolution. You might also, another description is habitual patterns insisting on intimacy with us. So there's that insistence and there's that closeness. They're right there in our mind. We can't possibly shut them out. Okay. And it's bringing awareness and attention to them that gives us the opportunity for resolution. So when a hindrance is pushed away, it just becomes more insistent. There's a phrase of Attila's, who's one of the long-standing order members of Tretna, and his little aphorism is, what's kept out controls. What's kept out controls. So one sort of visual metaphor for that that I quite like is if you imagine you're in a swimming pool and you've got an inflatable ball, beach ball or something, and you're trying to keep it under the water. So you're trying to keep it out of sight, like pushing it down under the water, and it's going to take And pretty much most of your effort to do that is going to really occupy you. So what's kept our controls? So what we don't want to do with them is identify with them. So this is actually linking in with the first half. So the first half was really emphasizing that something really key in what makes a hindrance is the identification, the strong sense of me and mine that's involved. So if I'm identifying with a hindrance, say it's ill will, then I'm just being angry. And so this isn't going to help. Another way of putting that is that there's a difference between wise attention and unwise attention. So unwise attention is kind of just being angry, expressing that, and that just makes it grow. It just develops it. So that's what we don't want to. But what we can do is sort of recognize and bring awareness and attention to, and sort of, well, in this metaphor, act as a host. So this is very much like the being with I described earlier. You're bringing awareness to, you're sort of being with. So you can think of that in terms of, we've got this sort of natural human capacity to be with one another. So if you imagine you're just spending time with a friend and you're just accompanying them, you're just being with them, you're just present with them, taking them in. Yeah. And so parallel to that, it's quite possible for us to be with our own experience in the same sort of way, in a sort of spacious sense of just natural human empathic presence. So all you need in order to meditate effectively, in order to engage with hindrance effectively, is humanity. So we're all qualified. Yeah. Robots can't meditate. Human beings can meditate. Yeah, so this is wise attention. And then right at the end, Rumi's saying, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond, what's this about? So we can see hindrance as a sort of returning to the mind of what's unresolved. And there's a sort of innate wisdom in this, even seeing it as an innate wisdom. It's the wisdom is the knowing of what's unresolved. So take anger and ill will again. There's an unresolved reactivity, an unresolved communication, an unresolved relationship, and there's a sort of there's so something in me is feeling really angry, and the thing that something in me really knows is what that is. It may not be very clearly articulated to me quite what the issue is, but that issue is known by that angry part of me, by the part of me that's in the hindrance. So to take an example of what that sort of knowing is, supposing I've kind of got this awareness that I've forgotten something, I meant to bring something and I can't remember what it is, but I know I've forgotten something, and then I sort of and I turn over in my mind, well, was it my keys? Was it my driving license? Was it my bike? And at a certain point, I'll get the right thing. And it's like, oh, it was that, And then there's a recognition. Oh, yeah, I've forgotten that. Yeah, so that's what was known. Yeah. So in the same sort of way, within a experience of hindrance, so something in us is feeling angry, for example, that something knows what the issue is. But it's not necessarily going to be telling you it in a straightforward way. So you can see hindrances as sort of frustrated or thwarted emotions with an inner wisdom. And they'll continue to present themselves to us until that there's that resolution and that kind of inner wisdom is kind of opened to us. Yeah. So there's the opportunity within a hindrance. So within meditation, well, first off, don't think your meditation's anywhere else. So if the hindrance is knocking on your door, that's where your meditation is. If actually it's not knocking on your door, it's just gone past and it's off, then okay, back to the breath, no problem. But if the hindrance is insisting, then that's where the motivation is. So it's important to entertain them for as long as necessary, as long as needed. So along with a sort of welcoming attitude, it's like, how would it be to just allow this experience to be here in my experience for just as long as it needs to be? Not being impatient with them. So it's quite easy to get into that of sort of, you know, you think, all right, okay, patience, that's a way of working with hindrance. So here am I in a hindrance. I'll give it 10 minutes. I'll be really patient with it for 10 minutes. That's a good chunk of time, and then it will go away. unfortunately, that's not a very effective approach. You know. So really, it needs to be as long as necessary. And another one, again, is aphorisms or quotes, was only infinite patience brings immediate results. so it's when you really let go of, you know, wanting it to go away soon that that things can move on. Yeah, so it's important to be patient with them. It's also important to know the difference between, well, Bhagavata's using the words entertaining and indulging. But by indulging, he particularly means identifying with, and hence engendering, cultivating, developing. Whereas entertaining is sort of being aware of, holding in a kindly awareness, having a sense of forbearance in relationship, be patient with what's difficult. And then this last little aphorism of Prakasha. Every feeling would most dearly and deeply like to be fully felt through. Then it will become a happy and integrated feeling. so it's like actually awareness, sensitivity, feeling into. That's what's actually wanted by this part of us. It's feeling annoyed or anxious or whatever. So they manifest in a painful way, these hindrances. They have a painful feeling tone to them. But their inner nature is more one of sensitivity. So again, to come back to anger or ill will, people get angry because they feel hurt. You know, they don't get angry arbitrarily or irrationally. Well, that's quite a good word. They get angry for a reason. That's not to say it's a good reason, but it's a reason. You know, they get angry. We get angry because we feel hurt. So there's a sort of a possibility for understanding that could come in there. Okay. So to take a more particular example, supposing we're kind of noticing the thoughts arising in our mind, and supposing I notice that actually the main content of this thought is blame. You know, for some reason I think someone's done me wrong, I'm blaming them, I'm preoccupied with it being their fault. And so I become aware of this chain of thoughts. And then underneath that chain of thoughts, there's a view that they're wrong, that they've done me wrong. So there's the view. And along with that, sort of underneath the thoughts, along with that view, there's going to be an emotion. So in this case, it's anger, it's aversion, it's ill will. And the blame, the thoughts, they were like a sort of shield, because the blame was also all saying, it's not about me, it's about them. You know, I'm fine, they need to change. So that's a sort of diversion. And what it's diverting us from is experiencing the painfulness of the emotion. So the anger is a painful thing to experience. And to acknowledge that sometimes I'm actually an angry person. You know, sometimes I'm not, you know, this wonderful, tranquil, equanimous person that I like to think I am. That's painful as well. So there's a sort of painfulness in acknowledgement. And the blame is just a way of diverting, of shielding from that, difficult experience. But if we're prepared to turn towards, if we're prepared to stay with this awareness of the anger and its painfulness, it can reveal to us this sort of underlying sense of hurt. So we're angry because we feel hurt. So there's a sort of feeling hurt in there underneath the anger. And staying with that, again, sort of sympathetically, sensitively, empathically. See, that hurt is a sort of, it's a feeling experience. So it's a sort of expression of the natural sensitivity of our mind. So we're hurt because we're sensitive. We might like to present ourselves as quite robust, but actually, innately, we're actually quite sensitive beings. And the reason we're sensitive is that we're human, and we have this natural human awareness, and awareness has this quality of sensitivity. And sensitivity can be quite raw and quite painful. We can be quite easily hurt because we're sensitive beings. So then we're sort of feeling our way down, and we're coming back to a quality of awareness. We're coming back to sensitivity, which might feel quite raw, but it's the quality of awareness. And awareness is actually where we can go. The whole meditation is actually about cultivating awareness. So we find that through turning towards the hindrance and engaging with it in the right way, in a skillful way, we're feeling our way back into what's actually most central to the meditation practice, which is this connection with cultivation of engagement with awareness. So this is a sort of process of bringing hindrance to resolution. And it requires patience, it requires kindly awareness, and it requires honesty, preparedness to be with how we are and acknowledge, actually, this is how we are, sometimes at least, this is the sort of person we are. And you can see, it's not about identifying with, but it's also clearly not about rejecting. So we're not kind of pushing the guest out and slamming the door on them. And we're not identifying with them. So you can sort of see it as a middle way between identifying with and rejecting. And what's that middle way like? Well, it's about approaching sympathetically, not confrontationally. And there's a sort of feeling into, this whole approach is one of feeling into, sort of looking for the nuance of the experience, that sort of unique experiential signature. This is exactly sort of the texture of it, what it's actually like to experience it. And then seeing if it will reveal what's driving it. So it's very much a feeling into conditionality, a deepening our awareness into the nature of conditionality as well. What's underneath that? What's driving it? Where's that coming from? So strong hindrances may well not be resolvable in one meditation. It may take a long time. But that long time is just going to be a succession of opportunities. When this hindrance comes back, there's another opportunity to work with it and to resolve it to some degree. And so all that's needed is just to take the opportunity that's present now. So don't worry about all of our upbringing and our past conditioning and so on. It's just kind of be open to which guest is arriving now and greeting them, being with them. And don't worry about all the others. They'll return if they need to, basically. So you can see working with hindrance in meditation as this endless series of opportunities, just working appropriately as you can with what's there. And when the hindrance withdraws or dissolves or resolves, just coming back to the focus. So along with the opportunity to engage with and work with and transform hindrances, there's the opportunity to engage with and explore and deepen into the experience of concentration deepening and moving into dhyana. So it's sort of win-win, really. You can't lose. Either your mind's in hindrance or it's not. Either way, there's lots of opportunity to work creatively in the meditation practice. So that's my second approach. And one last little point I wanted to drop in, which you can do as a sort of closing stage of meditation, is the next stage of the practice, the Anapanasati, which is One trains oneself gladdening the mind, I breathe in, gladdening the mind, I breathe out. So it's sort of like ending on a lighter note. We're just turning the mind towards whatever's pleasant and enjoyable and delightful in the experience. And there's so much there just in the basic sensation of the body breathing that's kind of light and delicate and enjoyable. And also in the quality of awareness that we bring to it. So even if experience is difficult, the awareness itself is not going to be caught up in that difficulty. It's going to have this sort of enjoyable, open, spacious quality to it. So just bringing that to mind, gladdening the mind. Ah, the breath. Ah, wonderful. Great. Yeah. Breathe in, breathe out. Okay. An opportunity to have a go at that, but also an opportunity for any questions beforehand, if any of that wasn't clear. It's probably more familiar ground, isn't it?
Just a reflection on, you know, they use the word sensitivity and, you know, thinking about vulnerability.
Yeah.
You know, and that, going back to the five poisons from the Tibetan, the opposite of vulnerability in many ways is deluded pride, isn't it? Because you're not accepting that aspect of your human nature. You think, I can do it all, I'm a great meditator, I don't get angry, and all that kind of thing. So I think, for me, that was really, really helpful.
Maybe, yeah. Or maybe you could say the opposite of vulnerability is defendedness. You know?
Yeah.
Because vulnerability is, in a way, it's another way of saying undefendedness. So if your defences are down, in a sense you're vulnerable. But in another sense, you could just see that as being open.
Yes, that's where I'm coming from, is saying it's a really good quality for us to be able to let down the guard and that awareness, that, you know, be sensitive to what's actually going on, as be open to what's going on, be vulnerable to the risks of opening up like that. That seems to be a kind of quality that we may not naturally have, or some of us may not naturally have, but could really be helpful.
There's a Pema Chodron's soft spot.
Yeah. The soft spot.
She always talks about the soft spot, doesn't she? Which is a non-defendedness.
And that's a good way of understanding the openness quality of awareness, isn't it? It's an open-heartedness, it's an undefendedness. It's a letting in. Okay, shall we have a go?